Okay, next we have Tim Salamans on weight normalization, a simple reparameterization to accelerate neural network training.
Thanks. Thanks for the introduction. So I will be talking about weight normalization, a reparameterization trick which allows you to speed up the training of neural nets. And this is joint work with Dirk Ingma. So I would like to start with a little bit of a historical perspective. I'm looking at this huge room here, and NIPS is a larger conference than it has ever been, and almost all the talks that we have here have something to do with neural nets in some way or another. But really not that long ago, the consensus in the AI community was that training these deep neural nets using stochastic gradient descent was really never going to work. And one of the main problems that was pointed out is something called the vanishing or exploding gradient problem. So to see what this problem is, let's first look at what a neural net does. A neural net is really nothing more than a sequence of affine transformations followed by nonlinearities. And when you do a forward pass with a neural net, you put in the data, you compute your layers in sequence, then you get something out with which you can associate the loss function, and you backpropagate the gradient, and you update your weights. Now, if you look at the gradient that you get for the weights in one of the lower layers of the neural net, then what you see is that it's really a product of many Jacobians. These Jacobians, you get one for each of the layers, and this product can be unstable if you're not careful. So in particular, if the eigenvalues of the Jacobians are larger than one, the product might blow up, or if they're smaller than one, the product might vanish. So we can see the same problem just by looking at the forward pass of the neural net. We start out with data that has a nice scale to it. Maybe we initialize it to have mean zero and standard deviation one. And then we propagate it through our neural net. Now every layer that we pass through has the ability to change the scale of the activations. And if you specify your neural net in such a way that it decreases the scale, then after many layers, you end up in a situation where you have no variation left. That's the vanishing gradient problem. On the other hand, if the layers increase the scale, at some point, the scale blows up and you have this exploding gradient problem. So looking at it from this direction, the solution seems clear. We just need to make sure that the scale stays more or less fixed as we propagate through the network. And in fact, this is exactly what batch normalization does. So what batch normalization does is it takes a mini batch of data. So here I'm showing you 100 examples from C410. Then it propagates this batch through the network. And at every step, it takes the pre-activations. It computes the mean across all these examples in a mini batch. It computes the standard deviation, and it normalizes the activations. So by definition, it actually takes care of this scaling problem that I showed you in the last slide. Great solution, very successful, but it has the strange property that if you now at training time make a prediction for, say, the top left image in the mini batch, it is actually a function of also all the other images in the mini batch. And because these images are sampled randomly, this adds noise to the procedure. Now, for many applications, adding noise is actually a good thing. When we're doing classification, we might otherwise overfit, and adding noise gives you a regularizing effect. But for many other applications, like, for example, deep reinforcement learning, adding this noise can destabilize training. And for other applications, like, for example, generative modeling, we're usually still in a regime where we're underfitting rather than overfitting. So you really don't want to regularize if you don't have to. So for these applications, we propose something else, which we call weight normalization, which attempts to get the benefits of batch normalization, but without adding noise. Our solution really consists of two parts. The first is an initialization part, where we try to set the initial parameters in such a way that we get this beneficial scaling that we get from batch normalization. And the second part is a reparameterization part, where we try and make sure that during optimization, these gradients stay well-behaved. So the first part is also has been proposed by several other authors who also show great results using this approach. So let's first talk about initialization. We start out with a neural net, randomly initialized weights, W and a bias B, for each unit in the neural net. And then we perform a single forward pass where we do initialization. So the initialization will be based on the data that we feed in. For each unit, we compute this pre-activation t before applying a nonlinearity. We compute its mean and its standard deviation. And then we rescale the parameters. So we take our weights and we divide them by the standard deviation. And we take our bias, we subtract out the minimum batch mean, and also divide by the standard deviation. And what you now see is that if you recompute these pre-activations using these new parameters, you have something that has mean 0 and standard deviation 1. So now you can apply the nonlinearity, feed it into the neural net, into the second layer, and so on. So if you do this for every layer, at the end, you're basically in the same situation that you had with batch normalization, but for a fixed deterministic set of parameters. There's different ways of implementing this. One way of doing it is to implement it directly in the layer definitions. So often what you will see is that the definition of a neural network layer will depend on whether you're training or testing, for example, if you're adding dropout or something else. What we're proposing is adding an additional phase that says initialization. And in this init phase, what we're doing is we're just adding this conditional statement where we're normalizing the parameters and normalizing the neural net output. Another way to go is to just leave your model definition as it is and have a separate routine that actually takes in a existing neural network model, goes through each layer one at a time, and fixes these parameters. We have example code for both of these approaches. The second part of our proposed solution is reparameterization. So what we propose doing is taking these weight vectors w and expressing them as functions of different variables, different parameters. So we have this g parameter, which is a scalar, and this v parameter, which is a vector with the same dimension as our original weight vector. So we take our new weights v, we divide them by the Euclidean norm, and we multiply by this g to make sure we can change the norm if we want later on. And now we do STD in the new parameterization rather than with respect to the original weights. And the effect that this has is it decouples the length and the direction of the weight vectors. So there's a very simple graph here, two dimensions, weight vector. Whatever the value of v is, the length of the weight vector will be g. And whatever the setting of g is, the direction, the angle of the weight vector will be given by a function of v. Now, the effect this has is that if you do optimization, this approximately keeps the beneficial scaling that we so carefully constructed using this initialization part. If you look at the first equation, you see the gradient with respect to this new parameters v. And it's a simple function of the old gradient. There's really two things going on here. There's a scaling factor in front. I'll discuss that in detail later. And there's a projection matrix. So what we do is we take in the gradient with respect to the original weights, and then we project onto the complement of that weight factor. And there's more analysis in the paper, but what this does is it kind of fixes the scale of the activations. Another way of looking at what's going on is by looking at the covariance matrix of the new weights. Again, we have the scaling factor in front and this projection part. So what we do is we basically remove one of the directions of variation, and this approximately widens the gradients, so it makes optimization easier. So the scaling factor that we have in front is also quite interesting because it basically gives you a sort of automatic tuning of the effective learning rate. The norm of these v variables will grow during optimization, so the denominator of this ratio will grow. And the reason is that, as I showed you earlier, all the gradients that we're adding are actually orthogonal to the current weights. And if you have a vector, you add an orthogonal vector, then you get something that is longer than what you started out with by Pythagoras' theorem. And the speed at which the norm of v goes up actually depends on your learning rate. So if you're taking large steps, then the deltas that you're adding to v are large. The norm of v quickly increases and your learning rate goes down, your effective learning rate. And the other way around, if you do only take small steps, then it stays basically constant. And the effect that this gives you is that you have a robustness to the setting of the learning rate. One of the things that people have noticed in batch normalization is that you can get away with a very large learning rate or a very small one, and the network will still learn. Whereas with the normal parameterization, you often have to be much more precise in picking the right learning rate. And the same analysis actually also applies to batch normalization for the largest part. So this is also an explanation of that phenomenon. Again, there's different ways of implementing this. You can do the direct route, where you define your variables, your weights V or W, as a function of G and V. And then you rely on automatic differentiation in Theano or TensorFlow to do the correct thing as you optimize. Or you can implement it as a post-processing step in your optimizer. So as I showed you in the last couple of slides, the gradient in the new variables actually depends, is a simple function of the old gradients. So what you can do is have multiple steps in the optimization procedure where you first feed in the old gradients, so that doesn't require you to change the definition of your neural net. Then you translate them to the gradients in your new parameterization. You take an optimization step in the new parameterization, and then you translate back to the old parameterization. So this way, you can also keep this reparameterization contained to something outside of your model definition. Also interesting to note is that you can combine weight normalization with batch normalization. And one variant that we found very useful here is something we call mean-only batch normalization. So in mean-only batch normalization, we do subtract out the mini-batch mean from the pre-activations, but we don't divide by the mini-batch standard deviation. And we can combine this with weight normalization by using this reparameterized neural net to compute the pre-activations in the first place. So we have a number of experiments in the paper, and the thing that we really wanted to demonstrate is that this method that we've proposed is a very general solution. You can basically take almost any code base and for almost any application, plug in weight normalization, and it will make things better. And we try and demonstrate this with experiments in supervised classification, generative modeling, and reinforcement learning. So our first experiment looks at supervised classification of C410 without using data augmentation. We take a standard VGG-style model, and we look at batch normalization, weight normalization, normal parameterization, and different variants of them. For each model, we optimize the learning rate to give us the lowest possible training error after 100 epochs, and then we compare how quickly they optimize. So what you see is that early on, batch normalization is still the quickest, but once we actually get to 100 epochs, weight normalization has fully catched up. And the normal parameterization is still lagging. And only when we anneal the learning rate, which is what we do from iteration 100 onwards, do actually all methods reach zero training error. In terms of the final result, what we find is that weight normalization and the normal parameterization give almost identical results. Batch normalization does a bit better. Presumably, this is because we add the noise that has this regularizing effect. But interestingly, weight normalization combined with mean-only batch normalization does best. So apparently, adding noise is good, but adding just this additive noise that we get from mean-only batch normalization, in this case, works better than doing full batch normalization. Also interestingly, combining weight normalization with mean-only batch normalization outperforms only using mean-only batch normalization. So apparently, this reparameterization is also important for getting optimal results. Once we did this experiment about a year ago now, and at that point, this was the state of the art on C410. Since then, it's been overtaken by these ResNet-type models. But we also find that weight normalization is useful on ResNets, and our next experiment is one demonstration of that. So here we look at generative modeling using convolutional variational autoencoders. And in fact, the model we use here is an early version of the model we presented at NIPS this year as well in our inverse autoregressive flow paper. Once again, we take the same code base and we just swap out the normal parameterization for weight normalization using this data-dependent initialization to start with. And what we find is that you get to better results using weight normalization, and it's also more consistent. So for MNIST, we ran the model multiple times, so we have error bars, and the error bars are much smaller for weight normalization. Another generative modeling experiment we did is using Draw. So Draw is this autoregressive model of images where you write to a canvas in multiple steps. And we took this publicly available implementation of Draw. And the only thing we changed is for every weight vector in the model, we applied weight normalization. This is maybe 5 lines of code. And in this case, it made quite a significant change. The optimization is really much quicker. And the reason is, I think, that this is a recurrent model where this vanishing gradient problem is even more important to address. And this is a nice plug-in solution to addressing this. Final experiment I wanted to show is on reinforcement learning. We used a re-implementation of DQN, also publicly available. Again, we used the same code base as was originally available, and we swapped out the normal parameterization for weight normalization, and on average, the scores get better. So these are 4 very different applications where weight normalization is easy to apply and has a positive effect. So we have code available online on our GitHub page, and if you're using Keras, we're making your life especially easy. You just import this one file, add 2 lines of code, and you're using both data-dependent initialization as well as weight normalization. So to conclude, if you're training a deep neural net, you have to be a little bit careful that you avoid this vanishing or exploding gradient problem. A great plug-in solution is to use weight normalization combined with data-dependent initialization. So for me, this is really the first thing I try when I tackle a new problem, and also for many of my colleagues. And actually, there are quite a few papers at NIPS this year that use this. And it's very simple to use. There's code available, so please do try this at home. So we'll be at poster 181 after this talk, and I would love to talk further. Thanks.
Hello. Oh, sorry. I'm back here to your left. Over here. Thanks for the very nice talk. I'm wondering, there seems to be a trend in the last few years that you can do very unholy things to weights during training, and that, you know, SGD works fine, and sometimes even better than not messing with the weights. So for example, I'm thinking of synthetic gradients, things like when you project your weights to binary, for example, as in binary connect. So I'm wondering if, you know, this weight normalization is just also in that general trend, and it doesn't really have much to do with the fact that it's normalizing the Jacobians.
Right, so there's lots of weird things you can do to gradient descent, and it still works. It's quite amazing. But having the right skill is still very important. And that's something that none of these modifications actually take away, I guess. So that's the first part of what we're proposing. And then if you actually initialize the weights properly to have this right skill, you still want to keep it there. And empirically, we do find that this actually helps.
Yeah, I mean, I guess just, you know, to just follow up real quick, you know, the control would be to try, you know, not changing the scale, but also messing with the weights and seeing if, you know, if it actually is that or the scaling. Anyway.
Okay.
Great talk. Question for the second 2 experiments, did you use mean only batch norm, or was it only weight norm?
For the second 2 experiments, we only use weight norm.
And so for
reinforcement learning, what we're finding is that if you add any sort of noise in this DQN, it's very easy to destabilize training. You get sort of feedback cycles and the thing breaks down. And also for recurrent models, it's not entirely clear how to best apply batch normalization. There's been some recent work that addresses this, but it's, at least at the time, it wasn't clear.
Do you still get a benefit from weight norm if you don't do data-dependent initialization?
It still helps. So actually, good timing. In this particular model, we don't do data-dependent initialization. And the only thing we changed here is to weight normalization. And apparently, it still helps a lot.
Thank you.
Very interesting approach. So for homogeneous, right here. So for homogeneous activation units like ReLU, the normalization parameters, I think you denote them by G, they all like kind of factorize together across all the layers. For let's say non-homogeneous activation units like sigmoids or the hyperbolic tangent, so they would not. So in your experience, this weight normalization, does it perform better for ReLU versus sigmoid, or does it matter? So how does it depend on the activation units which are actually used?
Right, so so far we've been mostly using ReLUs or ELUs. So in the convolutional VAE that I showed, we're using ELUs. I think DRAW uses an LSTM, so there's probably some sigmoid units in there as well. And apparently it still works.
Thank you.
Hi, over here on your right. So thanks for the talk. I've used weight normalization and it works. I had a question about the initialization of the gain parameter. Do you find that initializing to one is always optimal, or are there situations where bigger than one or less than one is, in your experience, a better call?
Yes, there are cases where initializing to something smaller than one is useful. So I'm talking about initialization of the scale of the output. So what the value of G is, that depends on your input data. So for example, in ResNets, one thing you can do is you can make the residuals have a smaller amplitude to start with. So you're closer to an identity mapping starting out. That can help. Also, when you have a difficult classification problem, you might use a smaller standard deviation on the output. Those are things that might be useful.
Thanks.
By the way, all the experiments I showed here use a fixed standard deviation of one.
Okay, so I have a question also. So how does this method compare to the unitary RNNs that were presented yesterday in a great poster? So they compared their method with a standard unitary RNN to the LSTM model on these classic synthetic benchmarks and actually beat the LSTM. Have you done similar tests?
I have not. I would definitely be interested to explore that further. Right now, I don't have a strong answer to that.
Okay, thanks.